Hey neighbor, this is Valerie, member at the Animal Kingdom, Boardwalk, and the Villas at Grand Floridian, and you're listening to My DVC Points.
Parents and the children could have fun together.
Please board quickly and safely. Our monorail will be departing momentarily.
Welcome to the My DVC Points podcast. Join the conversation as DVC members share their stories, personal preferences, and magical memories. Your reservation is confirmed, your fast passes are booked, pull up on the yellow strap because our journey into the magic of membership is about to begin.
To infinity and beyond.
Now, here's your host and curator of magical stories, Chad Pennycuff.
Welcome home, neighbors, to episode 101 of the My DVC Points podcast. It's rather ironic that this episode number is 101 because whenever I create a playlist of episodes that people should listen to whenever they're thinking about buying DVC, this would be the tail end of that series. Today's episode is probably one of the most informative episodes that we do. I gotta tell you, the pixie dust really isn't here today, okay? And I'm not gonna apologize for that because DVC is a product that spans generations. And in order for this product to transfer from generation to generation, you have to do a little bit of this estate planning and titling and thinking through. A couple of months ago, I changed my sign off where I tell people to take what they've learned and go out there and plan something magical for their family. And I think if you really take today's episode at heart, you will be able to truly plan something magical for your family that'll last beyond you. So that when you come back in and transition this contract over to the next generation, it does become a magical, great experience, and it's not a bunch of family members fighting. I'd also like to do a shout out as well to two of my sponsors, DVC Resale Market and DVC Rental Store. If Google brought you to our episode today because you've inherited a DVC contract and you don't know what to do with it or you don't think you're going to use it, either one of these partners can help you. DVC Resale Market is the world leader in DVC resales, and they will help you find a buyer if you don't want a contract. Perhaps selling the contract isn't the exact thing right now, but you can't use it. There's a really great company, DVCRentalStore.com, and they will help you find a renter for this contract. As a matter of fact, they usually have hundreds of families lined up that would love to rent out your points and put cash into your pocket or your estate. That's DVCResaleMarket.com or DVCRentalStore.com. Let them know you heard about them here on the My DVC Points podcast. Now let's jump into today's episode. Well, I would like to welcome back to the show, Alicia. How are you doing today, Alicia?
I'm good, Chad. How are you?
I am doing great. And also welcome back, Christy.
Hi.
And then I'd also welcome a first-time podcast guest. You've seen her on the lives quite often, but I'd like to welcome Vicky back.
Hey, everyone. How are you today?
I am doing great. Excited to get this estate planning show up and running. Before we do that, I need to do a little bit of disclaimers here for the simple fact that we're talking about estate planning and information and some kind of technical stuff that you might want to take into consideration. Our advice throughout this whole episode, and if you hear nothing else, consider this whole episode a big ad for you to go out and hire an attorney who specializes in estate planning in your state who can advise you according to your specific situation. We are not establishing attorney-client relationships. I'm not even an attorney. So I'm an idiot with a microphone, and these guys are not establishing any kind of attorney-client relationship with anybody. Our panel is composed of DVC owners. We're here to discuss opinions, options, and our understanding as normal everyday members. Please look at our choices and what we have done as our own personal choices. Again, we'd like you to come back in, do your own research, talk with your own attorney, and do your own planning for you. If we give you some ideas to talk about with your attorney, that's great. Please, please, please don't go making decisions solely on what we tell you. Hire a pro. Did I do good CYA there?
Fantastic, Chad.
I approve.
Concur.
I'm getting the concur attorney languages now. I'm kind of excited about this. In today's show, we're going to cover information on purchasing contracts, deeding the contracts, A little side note and something fun you can do with your family if you want to go pull up your deed and start to see exactly what rooms you own. We'll walk you through some of the steps on how to do that. My kids kind of had fun walking by the room and saying, yep, that's the one that we own. And I know some DVC agents out there say, like, congratulations, you own a doorknob or some little tiny fractional something of a room. We can show you how to walk by your exact room that you own or look it up into the group of rooms. We'll also talk some about titling the contracts and go from there. So, Christy, can you give a high-level consumer explanation as to what estate planning is?
Estate planning is the process of putting into writing what will happen to your things after you pass away.
When you die, what happens to your stuff?
Exactly.
That's really what we're talking about, because these are 50-year contracts. I bought my contract when I was 45. I'd like to think I'm going to live out my contract. My kids will be taking me in a wheelchair in my 90s, but that may or may not happen. So estate planning is, how do we come back in and transition this over to the next generation?
Correct.
Let's talk about this right up front when you're purchasing contracts, okay? So far we know Disney Vacation Development is the developer who sells the points, and you buy these contracts from Disney for use of the timeshare, and it comes out as deeded property, okay? And in deeded property, it's just like owning a home. You have to record the property as a piece of real estate with the county register and the deeds, and how you come back in and title that tends to matter. So can you guys tell me about some of the options that we came across for Florida? What are my three options here?
It would be taking title as individuals or in a trust or in some kind of corporate form.
For the point of this show, we're going to leave off the corporation one, although you can go to the DVC website and start to dig into some FAQs there if you're going to do some type of corporate deal.
They have good frequently asked questions about that, about LLCs and corporations.
Yeah, it really is. And so when I just scanned it, it sounded like if you had an LLC set up and you wanted to put this in there, you could change the LLC owners and have them designate people as members, and they would get blue card benefits coming with it. But that's got some other pros and cons to it. I'd tell you to go into a tax person, an attorney, hire some professionals if you're going to go down that route. That's my advice there. But it is worth looking into if you really want to figure out how to game the system there.
Definitely.
So then it sounds like we have a choice between a trust or not. Okay.
And if you have a trust, you would put it in your trust.
Okay. So that makes logical sense to me, because the trust is really just this set of documents that says, hey, look, when I die, all of my stuff is legally held in an entity, and all of your stuff gets owned by the entity. But when you die, you appoint one or two people as backups to make decisions about what happens to it.
Right. We're not going to make this deep. But if you had minor kids, the trust would hold the assets for those minor kids until they're older, including potentially your DVC contract.
Got it. And it could do your house, your bank accounts, your cars, your other things along those lines. Right, Christy?
Right. State specific, because in Michigan, for example, we don't need to put our cars in the trust.
Got it.
Chad, one of the things I think is important to remind people is that a trust doesn't mean you can't decide to do something different with it later. You can put it in your trust and you still have the ability to sell it or transfer it in and out of the trust at a later date. It doesn't mean that it's stuck in the trust forever.
Got it. And that would be, help me out here, revocable trust?
Yes, that is a revocable trust.
So you might hear the word irrevocable trust. That's kind of like a one-way street. Once it goes in there, it's in there.
All of the trusts that we're talking about are revocable trusts.
Got it. This is like a barrel of fish hooks, guys, and we're trying to make this simple for a podcast format to just give you some understandings and, again, get you to go either take some actions with your own estate planning attorney as to what's going to happen to your stuff, DVC being part of it. So if I put my stuff into a trust, which Laura and I have done, all of our contracts are in a family trust. For us, there's no practical difference. When we log on, it doesn't say trust names or any of that stuff. It just says, hey, Chad, Laura. So for us, it was pretty clean and simple to title everything into a trust. Have you guys found the same thing going on?
So we bought our contracts before we created our trust. We subsequently transferred it into the trust. But so far, I haven't found any differences or any difference in the way Disney communicates with us or how we're treated or cards or anything.
Same. Well, I bought mine in the trust, but at the same time, it still shows up with our names on everything.
Got it. Now, you had a little bit of an interesting story there as well, because didn't you try to buy this on a cruise ship?
Yes. And it was great because I actually wanted more time. I didn't want to sign to buy it on the cruise ship, but it worked out because with the purchase, there is the additional paperwork that has to be done, and it has to be done in the back office at DVC. And so you can't instantly buy them.
On a cruise ship, right?
Or probably at the resorts. It takes some time for the paperwork to be done there and to be generated.
Oh, okay.
Plus, they needed to see a copy of my trust. I don't think they needed the whole thing, but they may have needed the title page, the signature page, stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember having to upload mine to a Google Drive kind of a thing and create a private link to it. And that's how I shared it with them because I didn't want to email it to them. So there's some additional time and paperwork involved in doing a trust. DVC does this all day long. For me, I had to pay like, I don't know, $225 for maybe an hour of my attorney's time to come back in and get the documentation that DVC needed and send them the letter on the trust. And once he did that, I paid him for about an hour of his time. And then on subsequent purchases, I didn't have to go through any of those additional hoops. They already had all the paperwork. So all the add-ons just went right on through.
Did you find it easier or more difficult with a resale contract or a direct contract through the trust?
I bought my resale first and that started it. And then I came back in, and once I found my resale contracts and got my usures all set up, then I went in to add the direct. And when I did that, the direct actually held up my resale. My resale was ready to close. So mine happened all at the same time. And it was a little bit weird there. I would tell you, if you're a brand new person and you're starting to buy in fresh and you're buying direct and resale, start the direct process as soon as you get an offer accepted on resale, and then you'll be fine. We waited until we passed ROFR, until we started the direct process, and that was a little bit too long. That's why I had delays in getting everything done, but it all happened at the same time, so I really can't answer that.
I think that's helpful to know.
It truly is. And buying direct is usually pretty fast and easy. I think my thing was I had like 4 resale contracts coming in at the same time and a direct one. And they wanted to time them all together so that they all had the same member number. And they explained to me, this is for your own good. But I remember at the time it was like a 2 to 3 week delay getting everything worked out. And it just drove me batty. But now that I'm past it, it really is for my own benefit because they're all on the same member number. They all play together nicely and I got no issue.
So the simplest is one person on the title, one contract, and that's it. But that's not a reality for most people. And so it is important to look over all your different options.
Yeah. And even the one person deal, if you're a single person, I know Samantha bought and she had her mom put on as well. And by doing that, that takes a high level of trust to add somebody else onto the contract that you're buying for and paying for and you legally own. But that was her kind of a quasi estate plan as a millennial who was still coming up on her own. What's your guys' thoughts on buying contracts and adding other people to it?
I mean, from a legal standpoint, you always want to watch out for doing something like that. But if it's your mom and you trust how everything's going to work and there's no concern that your parents are going to get divorced and someone's going to fight over the legal ownership of your DVC contract because therein could lie a problem, or it's not like a friend that you could break up with, or you guys could be disputing how you own the points or just things like that. If it's just there for convenience, I think there's some benefits to that. For example, in Samantha's case, mom can now get the DVC discounts. Mom can also get the DVC AP prices. And I believe that anybody in mom's house can do those things as well for the AP discount. So there's some advantages to having the two separate houses and the two separate names, as long as there's not going to be any issue of ownership later.
Yeah, that's kind of it. Let's say, God forbid, something happens to mom, and then the siblings come back in and go, well, we inherited half of this DVC contract.
You know, or bankruptcy, like, and not to say this is happening in Sam's mom's case, but mom needs to file bankruptcy, right? Then they're going to look at this and say, well, you own this ownership interest in DVC. So there could be some problems with stuff like that. But if you say, okay, these problems aren't likely to exist, at least you know, you can think about those things when you're making that decision.
I think to your point, yes, you can get them a blue card and they can get some of the benefits. But if things go south, it really goes south beyond the level of benefit for a blue card.
The other thing to consider is liability issues. If a person's somehow held liable in a court case and they're looking at assets to pay for that, this DVC becomes an asset for that person. They're going to start looking at all of the assets that they're on, including the DVC.
That's title. Something to consider whenever you're adding people's names to stuff.
When I thought about it, it's the same as whether I would put somebody on my house title. If you want to put it in that perspective, many people would not willy-nilly add somebody to their house title just to get a discount or something like that. So it is a serious thing. It is considered real property, like a house.
Absolutely. We looked at it and decided against it. And I mean, we even looked at this and said, well, hey, do we take one of our contracts and just title it in like my sister-in-law's and ours name? And so that we could extend these benefits and try to game it. And I just looked at it and I was like, it's not worth the legal headache and hassle. It's not worth having a separate member number and having to transfer points back and forth. It was just so much more hassle. We're not getting into this mess. Is how we kind of summarized it for us. And I know other people look at things differently, and that's cool. It's your life and your money. I'm just here to tell you what we did and why we did it.
Yeah, from DVC member to DVC member.
Just like all the other content we create on the podcast, whether it's I Like Saratoga versus Old Key West, this is the decisions that we made and why we did it from our own personal values and opinions. Because I looked at it and I was just like, man, no level of discount is worth the headache and hassle it could be on the back end if things go south. Because death happens, lawsuits happen, bankruptcies happen, all kinds of weird things. We've kind of covered a little bit of putting it in the name of the trust. What are some options for titling this as a person, as individuals?
If you're buying a property that's DVC in Florida, they give you an option to check four boxes. So these are tenants in common, joint tenancy with right of survivorship, and tenancy by the entireties, which is for married couples.
And this is if you are not purchasing it in a corporation or in a trust.
Correct. This is all individual ownership. So we've got four options here. Let's start to break these down a little bit. The first one, tenants in common. From my research, it sounded like this was the default in Florida if you submit a title and don't specify. So what does that mean if somebody dies? If Laura and I owned a property with tenants in common and something happens to me, what happens to the property?
It means that your share of the property would be probated, essentially, and 50% of the title of that property needs to be distributed to somebody else.
Got it. It sounds like if there's two people here, I own half, she owns half, after I die, whatever my half has to go through probate.
This is if you don't specify as 50-50, but the unique thing about tenants in common is you can do different portions, like 30% one person, 70% another person.
Right. But either way, whatever percentage Chad has would have to go through probate to change the ownership of that percentage.
Okay. So that's what happens with tenants in common. What about joint tenancy?
It's the same, except that apparently everybody equally owns it. So you and Laura equally have 50%. So still that 50% needs to be probated to determine who is getting it.
Okay. So it's like my stuff is my stuff. Her stuff is her stuff. Mine goes to my estate. Hers goes to hers.
It would go to your estate and then be distributed through the terms of your estate plan if you have one. Or if you don't have an estate plan, where you reside rather, will determine how your property is distributed.
Okay. So then what does this joint tenancy with rights of survivorship do for us? That's option number three.
So that would allow Laura, who you own the other half of the property with, to receive the property automatically.
Got it. Now, I heard that was, and I kind of like the term, by operation of law. It sounded kind of fancy.
I feel like that's the process of showing the death certificate and saying, yes, this person has passed away. Now this person can own the property.
Got it. If Laura and I weren't married and we own this property together and I die, all she has to do is show the death certificate and say, hey, look, he's no longer with us. This was joint tenancy with rights of survivorship. I'm the survivor, therefore it's all mine.
Correct.
Got it. So then the fourth option here, tenancy by the entireties, and what's special about that one?
My understanding is it's entirely the same as the third option, but it's just limited to married couples.
In Michigan, for example, tenancy by the entireties offers an additional level of protection that married couples can have over their real property so that a creditor can't come in and attempt to take 50% of the assets. If you own real property as tenants by the entirety in Michigan, a creditor can't invade it.
So that's a good point. A lot of the things we're saying today, it's state by state specific.
Which again gets back into our disclaimer up front. We're here to just talk about some high level stuff. And really this whole thing is a big ad for you to go hire a estate planning attorney that can guide you appropriately. Go hire somebody that can give you specific advice for your specific situation in your state and apply this, because we're not giving specific advice. We're just coming back in and giving some generalities. So far in the podcast, we've covered, do you put it in a trust? Do you put it in individual? We've just summarized up the four boxes that are here. It sounds like whatever is going to give you the best protection as a married couple is the one you should be asking your advisor about. Well, now that we've got these options covered, let's come back in and just start talking about some practical questions here. And so if I start adding somebody to my deed, okay, would I be well advised to go talk with an attorney and a tax person on that for like gift reasons?
Absolutely. If you're alive and you're adding people, then you absolutely need to talk to a tax advisor.
Don't start adding people to your deed because it's just got some tax consequences. Here's another thing that I see happen a lot with property is people start to come back in and maybe they bought their DVC when their kids were small, but now their kids have grown up and they want to add them to the deed. What kind of issues or complications are out there when that happens?
The issue that we talked about earlier of liability, it is treated as an asset for that person you add. So if they subsequently go through any legal trouble, any bankruptcy, if they're found liable in a civil case or a criminal case, they could come after your DVC because they now are part owners of it. So just as any other property, anybody you add to the title comes with risk.
Got it. And that's with individual ownership. What would happen if, let's say, my oldest daughter, Reagan, becomes 18 and I add her as a trustee to the trust, and now therefore she is kind of, from DVC's perspective, as a trustee, she's a part owner and she gets her own blue card.
The blue card is a nice benefit for a lot of people, but because this is legal property that you're dealing with or a legal entity of a trust, there are all kinds of ramifications you need to consider when adding a person. And the blue card benefit is nice. It probably does not outweigh all of the risks that you can
take. Some people need to think about, too, that if they're thinking of adding somebody for the blue card benefit, there are still pass holder benefits and they can get their adult child a pass because they reside in the same house. If these things still exist once it's time to do that, then that makes sense because there's not that many things, at least discount-wise, that you couldn't get as an AP versus a DVC cardholder.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of would be having a Walt Disney World annual pass gets you nothing in Disneyland, okay? But a blue card will get you a little bit of something in Disneyland. They don't have as much love for us over there as they have in the world, but that's the only thing I could think of as a difference. Because I kind of saw some of these complications here, I did something when I bought my contracts direct, and it's something that people might want to consider doing, and some of the rules have changed in doing this. We own 225 points at Copper Creek. I had them divided up into four contracts. I have 350-point contracts and 175-point contract. That's because at Copper Creek, they wouldn't sell 25s, and I'm glad they wouldn't because 50 is about as small as I want to go on a contract. But I did this so that later in life, when my kids become older, I can come back in and just say, here's 50 points at Copper Creek. It's a direct contract. It's a very small gift. It should have very minimal gift tax implications on it. But back in the day, 50 points was all you needed to get a blue card. It was actually 25. Okay. But now it's 100 points to do that. But my contracts are still grandfathered in, so I could come back in and say, okay, I no longer own this 50 points. Reagan, you, your spouse, your significant other, however we choose to title it in that point, but I could just give her those 50 points, and now it's a clean break. And I've kind of set her up for blue card benefits until that contract expires.
And Chad, I wish I had had a podcast like this to know before I bought my points. We have three children and we bought two contracts, 150, 175, and that doesn't split three ways very well. So the trust is what we decided to do, but I wish we would have known that.
I just did a ton of research on this. And again, it's probably my financial planner background that's coming out here. And the fact that I have went through so many issues with families, just unpacking life and money with them, that I've kind of seen and have this wisdom from being an advisor to people on their money for what happens when things get ugly and things go south. So that's something that I looked at. And at the time, I honestly thought we would end up buying most of our points in resale, and then Reagan could come back in, buy a resale contract, and always be keeping a resale contract, but writing out this 50 for her blue card. That was my plan, and then they changed the rules on resale. At the time when I did this, DVC was charging about $60 extra a contract to do this. And the reason why we ended up at 225 points was there was a break point at the time in the price points. And if you bought 220 points, then you got a lower cost per point after you took out all of the math marketing. And that's probably a whole nother podcast right there. But people really need to look at where do they get the biggest developer credit at when they buy points, and kind of either round up to the next place, and it'll bring your average cost per point down. And the reason why that matters is sooner or later, you will want to resell. 50% of you will within 8 years of buying, according to the research. So I looked at it and I go, I'm not going to beat the average here. If I'm average and in 8 years we're out of this for some odd reason, then a smaller contract will sell faster. It'll sell for more per points. And as a matter of fact, yesterday I recorded the March show with Derek, and he said, hey, I've got to list this 50 point poly contract. And literally within 3 minutes, that contract sold. Okay. That's how fast they got an offer in at full value for the contract, and they sell it more per point. So you're getting more of your money back out. And at the time, it was an extra $60 per contract. So I had to pay to get four contracts instead of three, I had to pay an extra $180. Now, from what I'm told from my guide, enough people started doing that it become more hassle for them. And I think they're charging like $600 a contract. And to me, I still wouldn't shy away from it. I would just pay the $600 and go forward with it, because I think I'll get that $600 back later when I'm giving this away and I'm giving away a lesser estate value, or I'm selling it and I'm getting more per point. And what's your guys' thoughts on that strategy?
That's actually really interesting.
Yeah. And on the flip side for us, Chad, we looked at it as we're going to buy it, ride it till the end, or gift it to our children. While I wish I had looked at estate planning a little better prior to us purchasing it, that wasn't as big of a thought process, the smaller contracts and things. But I think it makes a lot of sense for most people. We buy our cars new and drive them till they die. We kind of planned on doing this with the DVC contract as well. But I think for the average person or most people, your strategy makes a lot of sense. That $600 per contract would probably make me shy away a little bit more. The $60 would have been a no-brainer.
Got it. So, Christy and Vicky, if you're buying a couple hundred points, is it worth $600 a contract to divide this out into maybe 100 pointers so that your kids can pass on and get the blue card benefits? Do you think it's worth $600 extra today versus later down the road? Because you're going to have to pay to retitle everything later anyways. And that's a per contract cost as well.
I think it depends on what you have going on. Like Alicia potentially now wants to have a different contract amount because she has more kids. Well, I have one kid, and so my one kid can take my one contract, and that makes it easier. And if you're at the point where you don't have kids and you don't know where that's going to go, then I guess that's something to consider as well. But I think it just depends on the circumstance. For us, I don't know, even if it was $60, if I would still buy a bunch of smaller contracts.
If your family planning has one kid and you're one and done, that's kind of over, right? And if you're not looking at any kind of a exit strategy from a resale perspective, it doesn't make sense.
Right.
Vicki, what's kind of your thoughts on this from an estate planning perspective and the $600 per contract fee?
From what I've seen, it seems like a no-brainer to just spend the $600 and have the contracts broken out per child, whether you have one or three. It eases the back end. You're paying a lot now and you have to pay it up front, but it makes it much simpler when you're not here anymore. And then the kids have to deal with what's left. Even if you're doing it to make it easier to sell smaller contracts on resale, I think it's worth the cost to do it now because it makes your life simpler later.
If there is a thought that something like that may happen in the future, the price is just going to go up, right? Because if it went from 60 to 600, is it going to go to 6,000 next? That seems a little high. But whatever it is, the prices almost always just go up. If it's a consideration at all, then whatever the price is still going to make it worth it for your end goals.
Yeah, if I had somebody with multiple kids or planning on multiple kids, I would come back in and instead of telling them to do 50s, I'd tell them to do 100 today because that's the minimum that somebody needs for Blue Card benefits. And I look at it like $600 sounds like it's a lot, but let me rephrase that for people. That's 3 points. Okay, that's buy three less points and you've now covered the $600. So would you take three less points on your contract to have ease of transfer to kids? For me, no brainer, no questions asked, make it happen. And I also look at it like a 300 point contract is going to sit there on the market longer if you ever have to sell it. Or let's say if you have three 100s, now you have an exit strategy that comes back in and it lets you just shave off 100 points. Let's say you need to scale back some, or you have some kind of an emergency and you need some cash within 3 months' time, which is about what it takes to sell and close on a contract, you could now sell 100 of your 300 points pretty easily. And you'll also get more money per point that way as well. So to me, it's still a no-brainer. I would still go ahead and do it. And I would do it at the 100 mark and not the 50s, just from experience.
That makes a lot of sense.
Let's talk about this fun part in that's pretty geeky, okay? I'll just use one of my Copper Creek contracts for an example here. I'll put all of this into the show notes, but when I actually pull up my deed, it says I have an undivided 0.244% interest in Unit 2G of Copper Creek Villas and Cabins at Disney's Wilderness Lodge, the condominium, according to the Declaration of Condominium, therefore, as recorded as instrument number 201700-96685 in the public records of Orange County, Florida, and all the amendments thereto, subject to the easements and restrictions of record. Gosh, that's a mouthful. But there's some talking points in here. One of them is this is on public record, and I'll put a link into the show notes for Orange County, Florida, Indian River County, Florida, where Vero Beach is, the Hilton Head County, Orange County, Anaheim, and the Hawaii Deed of Register. And you can go look up and search by last name any owner that's out there. If you ever get ready to rent from a private party, which I recommend using DVC Rental Store, because they will go do all of this searches for you and verify that whoever's renting the points is an actual owner. But if somebody says they're a DVC member, you can look up in these 5-county systems and verify that they have a public deed on record. This is a matter of public record. So that's a nice little nerdy fact for you. This 0.244% interest, that's like an insanely small part. And then it comes back in and it starts talking about Unit 2G. And it starts talking about of the Declaration of Condominium Associations. Now, whenever you buy direct, you get this full booklet. It's like they took an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper and shrank it in half and made a book out of it. I'll put a picture of it in the show notes. So you can actually page through there and pick out floor plans and start to see how they declared units of the resort. And so if you ever go to dvcnews.com, you'll see our buddy Tim says, hey, this new resort declared more inventory. And so they actually take a group of rooms or a group of villas and they declare them and say, okay, we are now taking these groups of rooms, moving them from the Disney Vacation Club development private ownership, and they're now declaring them as available for public sale. When that happens, all of the DVC members can book those rooms at the 7-month mark. So if you're ever trying to get into Riviera and Tim puts up a declaration notice, that should be your time to go out there and see if you can come back in and book some rooms. Because his staff looks at all of the documents that go through at the public record at the courthouse there and kind of gives us members a heads up on it. But you can actually see that. And so when I pull up in the maps, comes to find out Unit 2G is a dedicated 2-bedroom and a 1-bedroom villa on the 5th floor at Wilderness Lodge. And it is all the way at the end of the hall towards the Grand Villa. The Grand Villas are on the end cap. And as you're walking towards the Grand Villa, it's on the left side. So it's overlooking the main Copper Creek feature pool. And the exact room numbers there, because I looked it up on touring plans, is room 5133 and 5131. Now, that's some really cool technical geeky information. I think it was kind of fun to walk by with the kids and go, hey, this is the actual room that we are deeded owners of from this 0.244%.
That is very cool and very inside baseball, but I bet most kids.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you can come by as a family and it puts some physical reality to this is what we own. Okay. Now, 0.2144% of a 2-bedroom and a 1-bedroom. Like the old joke goes, congratulations, you own a chair leg.
If I buy another contract, I'm going to ask them if I can at least own a light switch.
Well, there you go. Okay. There you go. At least own the light switch.
Now I'm going to only want to stay in the room that I am the owner of.
Yeah. So now you're going to come back in and look that up at Saratoga, right? Oh, that could be an interesting deal. You know what? I think it is one of our life goals now is to actually put in a room request for that room, because it's actually a pretty decent room, okay? It's high up. You can still see the fireworks according to the touring plan pictures. And it's overlooking the feature pool, and you can still see fireworks. Like, what more could you ask for? And it's not on the 6th floor that has the jacked up balconies at Copper Creek, because the roof is coming through part of the room. So it's like the ideal room, if you ask me, other than the Grand Villa. But who has points for that? Earlier in the discussion, we've discussed adding people to your membership 20 ways from Sunday and how essentially we don't think it's that great of an idea. Okay. However, there is something that is really cool that you can do that DVC authorizes. And if you guys go back into Christy's interview from a couple of weeks back, we talked about her friend, and Christy, just bring us up to speed on that.
I have a friend with a DVC contract, and she does not utilize her points often. And so for about the last 7 years, I've been assisting and helping her manage her points and logging in as her, acting as her if I need to be, making reservations. I bank her points every year. So then Chad told me there's a better way to do this.
There is. Drum roll, please. Disney actually addressed this with a program called Associate Members. You can add somebody onto your contracts as an associate member. And an associate member has the right to call DVC, make reservations, including borrowing points, and they can also bank points. So it's like you're giving somebody the administrative control over your points and your reservations without them being in ownership, so they don't have any of those legal issues of liability and ownership and divorce and all that other kind of nasty stuff. But they can still help manage your contract. Sounds like that would be something that would be beneficial for you, Christy.
Absolutely. Yeah, I need to make this happen.
Yeah, because then you could actually call up and say, hey, I'm calling to work on my own account. And oh, by the way, I'm an associate member for somebody else's account and not have to call back twice and pretend to be somebody else.
So, Chad, what happens if you didn't plan well and you didn't have a trust set up and you didn't buy the appropriate amount of points to split between your children? What do we do now?
That's a really great question. You've got a couple of choices. You can't change the point amounts, but you can retitle them and essentially change the ownership. So that's one deal. And so you either change the ownership or you sell them and buy more. Those are kind of your options there. Let's talk about the first one with changing the name of the owners or moving things into a trust. If you've now heard this show and said, maybe I should put my contracts into a trust. Well, your attorney will walk you through all of these necessary steps, but I'm just here to tell you it can happen. There's a specific process that you can go through to do this.
You know, you can file through DVC to get the right of first refusal waived and then retitle the deed. Your attorney can do that, or you can use a title company to do so, but retitle the deed in the name of the trust and then file it in Florida.
If you add a name to your title, if you have any existing reservations booked, those reservations are safe. But if you remove a name or change the name title completely, you can't have a pending reservation at that time. And it takes about 3 months to change it. I stress, of course, that you need to contact member services, but from my understanding, this is how it works.
So that's interesting. They let you add people, but if you're going to take somebody away, you have to cancel all the reservations.
That's right, until it's completed.
Wow. So that's a little bit of a road bump to plan around as well. So I did do some research here, and it seems to me that like DVC to change title and use them as your title agency charges around $425 to change the names on a title. And through some contacts that I have, I found a title agency who specializes in DVC, and it's called TRS Inc. And I will put contact information into the show notes, but I know she can come back in and retitle a deed for you for around $200. Now that's without title insurance, but I think maybe we should have a conversation about title insurance and what that is.
So title insurance just is an insurance that you own, or the person you're buying it from actually owns all of the property that they say they're going to own. Where if you're transferring it or adding a name, you've already been through the title process and they already have insurance on that original title. So it's less necessary that you need to have the title insurance because you know that it's already been done and you have a warranty deed to warrant that that deed is good and the title is good.
So it's like if you're buying this from a complete stranger, in my opinion, you do want title insurance and it is worth the money because the title insurance comes back in and says, hey, this deed was unhindered. And when this comes into your name, nobody else had a claim to the deed. So whoever I bought this contract from doesn't have a pending lawsuit out there. Or a lawsuit with a judgment saying, hey, we have a claim to this deed and they can't sell it without paying us off, that you have a clean deed. It guarantees that when you buy something, you own it free and clear, unless you're mortgaging it. But that's another story. But whoever sells this to you, their mortgagee has been paid off. There's no pending lawsuits and you actually get to own this because there would be nothing worse than buying a piece of property only to find out later that somebody else had a claim to this property later, and now your title is all jacked up. That's what title insurance does for you. It makes sure that you legally own what you have, and if there's any kind of an issue or some mortgage didn't get paid off or there's some lawsuit, the title insurance company, it's an insurance policy that says they will pay off whoever had the former claim if they made a mistake.
That is correct.
I think you brought up a key point. If you already bought a title insurance policy and you know you own this property outright, and now you're just coming back in to move it into your trust because you've established a trust, paying for a second title insurance policy there, probably not the greatest value. Okay. And you might want to consider skipping it. I'm not going to tell you to skip it, but you might want to consider that and talk with your own financial dream team on that one. Okay, because we're not given specific advice. Does that make sense to you guys?
Perfect sense. We did a quit claim deed, a non-title insurance deed to ourselves, to the trust.
So that's how you did it and moved it into there. Okay. Yeah. So that's kind of the retitling process. And again, member services quotes you 400 and something bucks. Look at the show notes, figure out Karina's address and see if it makes sense to use a cheaper option that's out there from a Florida title insurance company. And from what I gather, I've heard some other people say they tried to use her for other timeshares, and she's pretty specific to DVC. I think she does a lot of DVC business, but you might want to go in there and do your own research on that one. I know Magic Vacation Title could probably do it for you as well, and they're the main title company that DVC Resale Market uses.
The other thing, too, is if you're doing a larger estate plan where you're transferring all kinds of assets like your house and other things, the attorney that's handling your estate plan can probably just handle this as part of it as well.
So that's good to know as well. It's something that your estate planning attorney might be willing to file the paperwork on as well. So I know with us and having so many contracts, if we were to come back in and change them, that would add up as well. So that's something else to consider in the how many contracts do you divide this into. Every time you get ready to change titles on something, you got another fee on the back end as well. So you really have to do some foreplanning on that one. I can say there's some great benefits to multiple contracts, but there's also some added expenses as well. Figure it out and talk with the DVC, your estate planning people, advisors, and make decisions appropriately.
And your tax advisors.
And your tax advisors. Good point. Good point.
I was just going to say, while this is probably not the preferred way to dispose of property upon death through the trust, we decided to hold the DVC membership in the trust for the remainder of the 50 years with the allowance of the children or the trustees to use the DVC membership instead of disposing of it, because it couldn't be disposed to each individual child in a way that made sense or a way that became fair. So we decided to just, as part of our estate planning, hold it in the trust. Hopefully there's enough assets in the trust to prepay the dues for the kids' use for the remaining 50 years. If not, they have to continue to pay the dues to get the use of it.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting conversation that we had offline. You were telling me that you had some research in the past where people owned property and it went to multiple different people. Some of the people paid the upkeep and some of them didn't, but they all wanted to use the property.
Correct. So the attorney that did our estate planning actually wrote in there, if there is not enough money in the estate planning to pay the dues, that the children have to pay the dues. The ones that do not pay the dues in any given year cannot use their allotted points for that year.
That makes that nice and clean and simple. So whoever pays the dues gets to use it.
Correct. Definitely the way it should be.
Yeah, I think it was pretty wise that you had that pointed out as a clause in your trust as well, to kind of proactively think about that and address it.
But I would say that's probably the least of the best options here. If you can split it, the trust will probably want to dispose of that property upon your death and assign it to a new person or persons. We just didn't plan well enough in the appropriate points to do that with three children. If you can, I would do it more the way Chad did, so that at the end, the trust can distribute those points individually to the children, and the trust does not have to stay open for a long period of time, because that has tax implications and other things, legal fees that you're going to be dealing with for that number of years. Whereas if you dispose of the property in the trust, distribute it out to the individuals that are trustees or beneficiaries of the trust, you can close the trust and not have to worry about it.
Yeah, because every year, doesn't the trust have to file its own taxes once you die? Because it's its own legal entity. So it has to file taxes and all that other kind of stuff. And there's fees and expenses to all of that. I guess it would be best case scenario to come back in and have the trustee distribute the assets as fast as they can and shut itself down and minimize the fees and then let everybody go their separate ways.
Yes, that is definitely preferred. And who knows, maybe we'll add a third contract and decide to change the way it's distributed in the future. But for now, it seemed like that was the best of our alternatives. But if you're looking at this on the front end before you buy, I would not suggest relying on this option.
Yeah, you said you had a 100 and a 175, right?
A 150 and a 175.
Okay, so here's what you need to do. You need to buy a 25 and a 175, and then your problems are solved.
The third kid thinks that then we should buy the 200, so that the one we like the most gets the 200, the other one gets the 175, and the one we like the least gets the 150. That's how my children have been lobbying.
Got it.
Honestly, you can tell them this too, which, again, this is too complicated for this post, but they each have a value, and then other assets in your trust will have a value. So it's not the kid you like the most, because they are going to pick and choose which kid actually gets the 200 point contract or whatever the different points are, they will get less of something else if they take those points. They are taking their value in DVC points versus maybe your property or house or that piece of artwork they really like or your wedding ring or whatever. So it's a choice.
The girls are just hoping that my son marries somebody who doesn't like Disney. And then he just says, I don't want anything to do with that. And you two can just use
you
it.
Out the pool, right?
It is hilarious what your children think about when you start talking to them about estate planning.
Yeah, and you had some, well, A, you're an attorney, and B, your family's had to go through some of this recently, right?
So my mother-in-law passed away not quite 2 years ago, so we've been doing all of this with her trust and estates and dividing up all of her assets. So the kids have had a lot of front seat exposure to all of this. And I would tell everyone, though, you should have these conversations with your kids because what you think they might want or what you think they might not want is very interesting. My kids are 16, 14, and 9, and they still have a grasp of things they want, and it may change in the future, but it's been interesting to get their input.
It really is. And when you talk to the people at DVC Resale Market for why do people sell, a lot of times we think we're going to leave these contracts to our kids and they're going to want them. And quite often that Disney DNA bug doesn't cross to the next generations. And they're going, oh, great, now I got a timeshare. And then they call up DVC Resale Market and they're kind of shocked to realize that, hey, wow, I can get 30 grand for this thing.
Life circumstances change, right? They go to college, they get married, they have their own family. They might be living in a place that makes no sense for them to visit Disney World. So it's important to leave them options too of what to do with that property. While we kept it in the trust, there is a clause that says if none of them want to use it, and they unanimously agree, then they can dispose of it.
Which that makes sense as well.
And if they don't unanimously agree, then they'll just have to have a hearing in court and it'll get worked itself out one way or another.
Yeah, a judge will decide, which is never usually a best case scenario.
Or I will strike them with lightning from high above.
Just haunt them, Alicia.
You own Polly, so I'm sitting here thinking of like those old Brady Bunch episodes with like the little tiki god kind of things that they come across and some bad mojo. I think there's one final point here to cover on titling, and in order for all of your points to be used together at the 7-month mark, okay, we've said this before in multiple places, but they all have to be titled the same way to get on the same member number. If I were to come back in and establish a new trust and I buy new DVC stuff with that, it's going to get a new membership number, even if it's the same use year. Because in order for your contracts to play nice together at the 7-month mark, they have to be the same use year, they have to be titled the same, and be on the same member number, right? If you go changing the title, it's going to kick off a brand new member number.
So it's a lot of things have to come together, all three of those things.
Correct. And if they're all the same, like my four Copper Creek contracts, I can use them all at the 11-month mark to book together because they're the same resort, they're the same use year, the same title, the same member number. So it makes it really simple when I get ready to book something at Copper Creek and it says, what points do you want to use? And you click the contracts, I just click all four of the Copper Creek contracts and then make the reservations. And then if I have to borrow, I have to specify which of the four contracts I'm borrowing from. And to make my life simpler, I try to clean one contract out. And so I borrow all 50 points. And then if I need to borrow another 10, I'll just pick it off of another contract. But I wouldn't come back in and try to borrow some from all the different contracts. That's just ugly.
That's a good reason why you have them all in the trust too. But as you've seen the complexities here, you wouldn't make a trust just for your DVC points. You know, it's a part of a larger strategy for estate planning.
Correct. So what advice do you guys have for people looking to hire an attorney? What generalities can you tell them to set up a trust if they wanted to?
I would say ask around for people that you know already and respect and like about who they recommend to do it. There should be a good significant cost to prepare this trust, and the price will depend on where you're located and the size of your estate, frankly, because the more they have transfer into the trust, the more work it'll be, things like that. So make sure it isn't $150. Make sure that you're hiring an attorney that you can actually do some research on and look up in various places to find out that this is something that they do and that it is an actual attorney versus a paralegal out in the back of a financial services office.
Yeah, you want to hire an attorney who specializes in this area of the law, and that's what they do for their deal, right?
Somebody who actually handles the estate administration portion when somebody passes away as well, so the probate and the trust administration, because they will see where the flaws of different estate plans are if they're not set up correctly, versus maybe even somebody who just is pushing the papers, because they might not see the effect of that trust later once somebody does pass away. Not always the case, but just something else to consider.
That was a good point, because some places you'll see they'll do a will or a trust for you, but they won't do anything else. And that's probably not a place you want to pick.
Yeah, you're kind of looking for a full service estate planning service here, right? I mean, I'm not using U.S. legal forms for my deal.
And really, that's the thing, is you can buy them from like Office Max or, you know, wills.com, but you just don't want to mess that up. This is the thing that it's pretty important to make sure it doesn't get messed up.
Yeah, because the whole reason why you're setting this up is so that it's cleaner and easier and facilitated later. So hire a pro, hire somebody who's got an attorney license, good reputation. This is their specialty. You know, attorneys are like doctors and people don't realize that, but you wouldn't come to a cardiologist and say, hey, look, can you remove some skin cancer? Okay. They're a medical doctor. Could they do it? Maybe. But I'd rather have a cancer specialist coming back in and treating my cancer.
That's an excellent point. Make sure it is something that they're good and that they do.
To that point, Chad, I am a licensed attorney and I didn't do my own estate planning. So that should say something. I mean, you should find somebody who specializes in it. I know enough just to ask questions, but I would never actually do it myself.
Yeah, and that's some wise advice. So if you're not going to do it yourself, that speaks volumes, okay? Because I know when I did mine, it was like $1,500 or so.
That could be a question that you ask when you're hiring somebody. Hey, do I need to come back to you every 2 years to give you more of my money, even though nothing has changed? Or if there are life-changing events, that's when you go and talk to the person.
Oh, that's a good point as well.
One more thing that I think we should just briefly touch on is, Chad, in a couple of podcasts, you have mentioned things like the gift taxes to giving your adult children part of your DVC membership. I am not giving tax advice here. However, right now, the way the laws are in the United States, you can pass the DVC contract upon your death without there being any tax consequence, depending on the size of your estate. Most of the states are allowing you to pass over $5 million per adult. So if you have more than that in your estate, then make sure you're talking to your estate planning attorney. You should already be doing that. But for most of us, it's not going to be an issue, and there will not be an estate tax attached to the passing of your DVC contract to your children upon your death.
I'll leave that there. My official advice is hire a pro. Final wrap-up comments here?
I just want to echo that, again, consult somebody that you know, that somebody else you know has used. There are a lot of people out there that can do this, but do use somebody who actually does this for a living.
For people with multiple children, I think it's a good idea to lay out everything you're going to do to avoid conflict later down the line. And DVC is one of those things. Even if you think some of the kids don't like Disney at this time, that's not to say that they won't have their own children and want to use DVC and everything. So I think it's a good tool. But again, check your own attorney, talk to your own tax advisors, and always DVC member services is a good resource too.
Absolutely. And the FAQs at DVC are really helpful. Those things are pretty well written, I have to say. So wrapping up the show here, I want to thank all of you for joining us. And Christy, how can people follow up with you?
I am located around social media as Pack Your Pixie Dust. So somebody can reach out to me, talk DVC, talk general estate planning questions.
Got it. And for those of you who are listening in Michigan, do you do estate planning services for people?
Yes, it is my primary practice area. So if somebody is in Michigan, I'm in the Detroit suburbs, and they want more information about estate planning for their own family, they can reach out to me. It would be easier to just find me in Pack Your Pixie Dust, and I will direct you to the correct email and phone numbers and things of that nature.
While I don't do estate planning, I am very active in the MyDVC Points community, and you can find me
there. I am also active on the MyDVC Points community, and you can find me on Trivia on Mouse Quiz. Right now it's Wednesdays and Fridays, but I think once the resort's open, we're just going to move to Fridays only.
Both Vicky and Alicia are regular quiz writers as well, so you can always join in on Fridays and hang out with us there at Mouse Quiz. As this episode wraps up Season 3, I'd like to do a final shout-out to the Season 3 sponsors, DVC Resale Market, DVC Rental Store, Incredible Vacation Homes, and Monera Financial. Thank you guys so much for supporting this show and helping us build this community. I'd also like to read a really cool comment that I read today in the MyDVC Points community group. Heather wrote, "We just passed ROFR on a new Copper Creek contract. I have researched this for over a year, went through the numbers, benefits of direct versus resale, kept my eyes on all the contracts, and listened to all the podcasts I could get my hands on before finally putting in a contract on the resort we had fallen in love with this past Christmas. I'd like to thank this community and podcast, as well as Andy Berry and the DVC Resale Market for helping me through this process and finally being able to call Copper Creek home. Heather, on behalf of myself, DVC Resale Market, and this awesome community of DVC members, you are quite welcome. For those of you who don't know, these four-person multi-member shows that are research-orientated shows require a heroic effort to create. Special thanks to Vicky as well for not only contributing to the show, but she also edited today's episode and wrote the show notes. MyDVCPoints.com/101 for the most detailed show notes you've ever seen in your entire life. Thank you so much, Vicky. That's going to be a great resource for people to go back to. Speaking of great resources, go ahead and search in your podcast app for DVC Newscast by MyDVC Points and DVC Community Hall Podcast. We launched two new shows this week just so that we can keep the MyDVC Points podcast a little bit more member story and interview focused. Our Sunday night shows that are live streamed to Facebook and YouTube now have their own podcast syndication. You can pick it up there if you miss a show. And as well, Shannon Ford's going to be leading an effort for a brand new podcast we're kicking off called DVC Newscast. And that's a show that's just focused on news stories and quick reactions to them. Thanks for listening, everybody. And as I've said for the last few months, I really, truly hope that you take the content from today's episode and go out there and plan something magical for your family that can last for generations.
Ladies and gentlemen, please watch your head and step as you exit, and take small children by the hand.
Aw, cheer up, Dad. You know I'll come back. With DVC.
My DVC Points is an unofficial Disney-inspired podcast created by fans of Disney Vacation Club. The thoughts expressed in this podcast are personal opinions and personal experiences. My DVC Points is not affiliated with Disney Vacation Club, the Walt Disney Companies, or any subsidiaries. We encourage listeners to contact their DVC guide or member services for official DVC policies.